Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, we've plenty for you this week on Dublin's Talking Sport to catch up on. We start the morning talking to Ken, as always, and then we get a rundown from Stephen O'Brien on all things NFL. Will Slattery talks to me about Leinster's victory in the URC against Ulster last night, as well as the other results. And of course, in GAA, we'll be talking to Sean Lane and Declan Drake, and of course, remembering the legend that is Brian Mullins. And Alan Cawley catches us up on all things League of Ireland at the end of the show. So download now wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning, Rich. How are you?
I'm great. Really, really good. Didn't get to play golf yesterday. Got rained off. It was absolutely torrential over here. And by the looks of what I was looking on the television last night, I think it moved over towards the UK a little bit later last night as well. All good with you?
Yeah, all good. Yeah, the weather was horrendous over here. But that's why we play snooker, Reg. It's an effect of snooker, thankfully.
Yeah, you're safe enough in there.
Snooker's been really good this week at the British Open. We had the mixed doubles, the world mixed doubles last weekend, which is a great success. Neil Robertson and Mink, the world champion from Thailand, won that, beating Mark Selby and Rebecca Kenner in the final. That was a great success. And then, of course, the British Open started with an FA Cup-style draw, which tried up a lot of great matches. O'Sullivan went out in the first round. A lot of the top seeds went out. They were all playing each other as well. And Mark Allen from Northern Ireland had a cracking match against Mark Selby yesterday in the quarterfinal. He beat him 5-3, and he's in the semi-final today, where he play Nopon Sangham from Thailand, and Ryan Day and Robbie Williams, who's a journeyman pro in Liverpool for 10 years now, and this is the furthest he's got. So it's a great opportunity for him as well. So yeah, it's been a wonderful week so far. It starts back on ITV this afternoon at 1 o'clock.
And for our listeners who don't know, Ken, is the tour fully back operational again after everything with COVID? Is the travel back? Are all the tournaments being held in their own native countries again?
No. Well, I mean, the boys will be going out to Hong Kong, where they'll have to quarantine for 7 days before the tournament starts. But the tournaments in China are all sort of off the grid at the moment, you know.
It's okay.
Nothing back in China, and we normally have about 4 tournaments in China every year. But I think there's a 2-week sort of quarantine before you actually can sort of go out China. So you got to stay in a hotel. So that's impossible for any of the players. So no tournaments in China, but all the tournaments around, you know, Germany, and there's a tournament in Turkey this year, Turkish Masters. They're all operational, and everything, of course, in the UK is back to normal.
Okay, and in the British Open then, who's your fancy? You're saying there's been some big names knocked out, so it might have opened it up a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think Mark Allen, you know, he's got the more experience at the big time. You know, he's 6 times winner of ranking tournaments. He's playing Nopon, his first second semi-final only. Ryan Day has won 3 ranking tournaments. He's in the other semi-final. So I would possibly say Mark Allen, Ryan Day in the final, and Mark Allen to win it. He's playing really, really well. He's been knocking in a lot of big breaks and centuries and stuff like that, and I would fancy him to win it, you know.
Okay, very good. Look, I know, like myself, you grew up watching the GAA over the years, and the sad news yesterday, Dublin legend Brian Mullins, of course, passing away, and you would have remembered those finals in late 70s and of course in 83 as well.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he was, you know, part of that Heffo's army, wasn't he?
Yeah.
In the 70s, you know, he won 4 All-Irelands altogether, and he was a colossus of a man, wasn't he?
He was.
On the pitch, you know, he was such a wonderful footballer and a great servant for Dublin. And, you know, it was a sad passing, and a lot of the Dublin supporters would be very sad over the weekend and that. And, he was a great servant to Vincent's club as well, and yeah, I met him a few times over the years. He's a lovely man, loved the sport, and interesting character, great character. He's a sad loss.
Yeah, I met him myself a couple of times as well, and in particular up in UCD, I met him when he was director of sport up there. I have to say, a fantastic man, very nice, but he didn't suffer fools lightly. He came to the point straight away. He was like, he didn't beat around the bush. If he had something to say, he said it, so you always knew you stood with him. Yeah, great guy.
Looking forward to the derby, of course, tomorrow as well,
yes.
Reg.
Yes.
Well, I mean, you've got your own derby.
We have. We've got Spurs and you've got City, of course. City at home.
Yeah.
City are at home against you guys. How do you fancy your chances? I mean, in fairness, United are going okay.
Everything in the paper is about how does United stop Haaland, you know, and that'll be the question. I mean, he's scoring goals for fun. He could become the, you know, the record Premier League goal scorer at the rate he's going. You know, I think he scored 11 or 12 already. You know, he's only played, like, you know, was it 6 games or something?
Yeah,
it's just ridiculous ratio. But, he's a bit of a beast. And it's going to be difficult to stop him, but I'm really looking forward to it. I think, like, you know, over the last couple of years, United fans wouldn't have been looking forward to this derby. But I think with their form of the last, like, 4 games, particularly the way they play it, I think we have a little bit more sort of hope. But
It's important who he picks.
A draw at best we'd be happy with, you know?
Yeah, a draw would be a great result away from home, but it's just so crucial who he goes with in this one, the selection process. I mean, especially in defence, who's going to put in there. I mean, I think that's going to be key.
I think Varane and Martinez have been playing really well together. I think they've been a really good team. Malaysia as left-back, and Dalo, who's having a really good season as well. I think that will be his back four for sure, you know? But I think the midfield is where, you know, they might struggle. Against De Bruyne, you know, who are they going to put on him? McTominay or Fred? Or I know Fernandes and Eriksen will definitely play. So it's possibly McTominay will be his job to try and marshal De Bruyne. But he's just so good, De Bruyne. You know, it's just going to be very, very difficult, you know. But anyway, we live in hope, Reggie. We live in hope. Optimism.
Well, it's something to look forward to tomorrow. 2:00, that one kicks off, and we'll give it a good view. Okay, when are you back at the table yourself again?
Be back for the Northern Ireland Open on the 16th. We have a qualifier next weekend.
Okay.
For the Scottish Open, and then not the qualifier, we'll be playing up in the Waterfront against Karen Wilson on the 16th in Belfast. That would be good fun. The last one of the best nights I ever had there was playing Alex Higgins when I was world champion, coming out and doing a benefit night in the Waterfront for him, and it was just a fantastic night. He never signed an autograph all night, and for a guy who was on the floor, he was drinking champagne in his dressing room.
He wasn't able to sign an autograph. He couldn't hold the pen.
He had time to sign them. Yeah, it was me signing. I was doing a benefit night for him. He went back to his room. He had about 30 people in his dressing room, cases of champagne, and he was supposed to be on the floor, like, you know.
Time to turn our attention to GAA now. In a moment, I'll be talking to Sean Lane and Declan. Before I do, I have to give a big shout out to the Aerog under 12s, my own son Aidan, of course. They're in the county final against Rathnew down in Ballinakill today, so the best of luck to them, and make sure they bring home the trophy. And time to turn our attention to the seniors now, and of course the big weekend of the Go Ahead Dublin Senior Football is championship semi-final action taking place at county headquarters, with the game spread over the 2 days, today and tomorrow. And earlier in the week, Declan sat down with former Dublin selector Brian Talty to preview the action. Let's have a listen to that.
Well, first of all, Brian, we have to say welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport. It's nice to sit down and chat football with you once again.
Yeah, thanks very much, Declan.
Okay, so Saturday is the first of the semi-finals, 5:15 at Parnell Park, a cross-Liffey game between Ballybode and St Enda's and Nafina. You firmly believe, before we start the general chat, that we have the best 4 teams left in the competition at this stage, Brian, based on what you've seen this year so far?
Yeah, I think so, and what we've seen in the championship so far. I suppose a lot of people would have expected to see maybe Ballymun or St Jude's in it as well. But, you know, the teams that are there are the teams that performed really well, and, you know, they deserve to be there. And I think probably, on form, they're the 4 best teams at the moment.
A little bit strange to see a last 4 in the county without the likes of Ballymun, Kickhams, and indeed, you know, St Jude's, who only less than 12 months ago were in the county final themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose you would have, at the start of it, Declan, thought, you know, that Jude's and Ballymun may get to the semi-finals at least. But, you know, as I say, on performance level, Ballymun didn't play well at all this year. Jude's played reasonably well. And I suppose they would think themselves they should have beaten Thomas Davis, you know, being a man up and 2 goals up. And then Davis has come back and got a goal at the end of it to win it. But it just shows you the character and the level of commitment that you have from Thomas Davis. And I think you're going to see that again against Kilmacud.
Okay, now we have two teams playing each other on Saturday of contrasting fortunes in the Championship over the last number of years. We've seen Bowden not only win the county, but also Leinster and All-Ireland club titles, of course. But Na Fianna, on the other side, are still waiting for a big breakthrough, and they have quite a talented squad. Really, I suppose, Brian, in many respects, it's time that they started to really deliver on their promise, and no better place to start than against Bowden here on Saturday.
Yeah, you would expect that. As you say, Declan, they've won a lot at minor under 21 level. A lot of their team are still playing as under 21 players, to be honest with you, at the minute. And I just feel they need to just add a little bit of ruthlessness to it and really go out and go for it, because the talent that's there is unbelievable. You know, not alone the talent, they're skillful. The pace that they have all over the pitch is unbelievable. And they have forwards who can get scores. But that forward line, to me, just needs to lift up another level. Need to work a little bit harder and get free to receive the ball and shoot, because every one of them can score. And the other thing is that when they lose possession of the ball, they need to work harder as well, I think, in tackling and not allowing the opposition defence to come out. But having said that, there's loads of talent, loads of pace, loads of skill in that Na Fianna team. And as you say yourself, they've come through all the underage groups and winning those, and now is the time for them to, you know, step up and as I say, be a little bit more ruthless and really go for it.
And Bowden not short of experience or talent themselves either under Kenny Nocton this year. How impressed have you been with the progress that they've made in the Championship so far, Brian?
Well, Declan, you look at it, if any team were going to lose Aaron Waters, MacDade and Ryan Bascal didn't play the last day as well. They're three major players for Ballyboden. But what's happened out there, Declan, is that Kenny Nocton has come in, and I think they realise, look, we've got to add young talent to this team, and they've added a lot of really good young fellas. And you know, you talk about Na Fianna having good underage, but certainly Ballyboden have had that over the years as well, and they've added a few fellas like that are interesting, like Alex Gavin and Ryan Baines in the half forward line or half back line, and two new midfield to me, and maybe to a lot of fellas, Michael MacDonald and Luke O'Donoghue, and these guys have been playing really well. So, you know, I think it's the credit to Kenny Nocton that he's brought these fellas in, and then you look at the reserves and that's where the experience comes in. Like, you have Declan O'Mahony, Conal Keeney and Michael Dara, and look, when they come in, they make a huge difference to a team. But having said that, I thought the last day that when they were winning the game well, They threw the lads in and it disrupted the whole momentum of the game. Having said that, Keeney pulled it back in again when he kicked two massive scores, you know, points that you expect from Conal Keeney with his left foot. But that's the experience they have on the subs bench, and fair play, as I say, to Kenny and their selectors. They've given the young lads a run and the young lads have done really well. So yeah, it'll be an interesting game. There's youth on both sides, and then there's an awful lot of experience in the subs for Ballyboden.
And of course, speaking of Keeney, he had a magnificent game for Ballyboden in the hurling last week. So, I mean, at his age, to be still performing at the top level in both codes is just wonderful.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, but he's a massive man. Like, he's a great love for the games, and as you say, to do it as a Jude player is just unbelievable, you know, week in, week out, like, kind of a thing. And he's a danger every time he comes on the field, and you saw that with the hurlers, I suppose, last week. But the good thing about him, I suppose, he has Galway blood in him, Declan, that's the thing.
Okay, fair enough. We'll get on to the Galway connection with the Championship a little bit later on, but not before we ask you to call this particular game. Is it going to be a Southside team in the county final from the first game, or can the only side left north of the river qualify?
I suppose as a Northsider, I'd be hoping that Na Fianna would come through, but it's going to be a real battle for them, really tough game, and it'll really go down to the wire. I just think that Na Fianna have got that pace all over the field. They're good defensively, and they've added where I thought they were over the last year or two. They were not that strong around the middle of the field, but they've actually added Michael Day to the middle of the field, and he's made a big difference, because it's allowed them to put Ali Fitzgerald, who was playing in the middle of the field, back to wing back, and he had a massive game the last day. He's a really good footballer, and I think they found the right position for him. So I think defensively Na Fianna are very strong up front. If their forward line get working, I think they might just pip it.
Okay, and they of course are one of three teams chasing a county double this year as well, of course, because their hurlers qualified for the semi-finals of the county championship last week. So Brian is tipping Na Fianna in that one. Okay, we'll wait and see how that one turns out. But a lot of attention is going to then turn to Sunday at Parnell Park at 4 o'clock. The defending champions, Kilmacud Croagh, putting Dublin and Leinster titles on the line against fellow Southsiders, Thomas Davis. We spoke previously, Brian, about the freshness in this year's championship. And one of the aspects of that freshness was Thomas Davis. Here they are in a county semi-final but up against the champions. What are you expecting from this one?
Look at Thomas Davis, like all through their history, will put a team out that will give you a great character, great work, and they'll fight to the very end. And they're very, very skillful players. Like, you look at their team and you say, pick out star names. There isn't huge star names as regards county players, but there's a lot of fellas who are very, very close to inter-county standard. And they work so hard, it's unbelievable. Like, they defend very well, they break out of defence at pace, they have guys who can get scores, they have a great free taker in Finn Murray. So Crokes are going to have to be careful about the fact of giving away scoring frees, because he will score from all over the place. He's a brilliant free taker. And they have forwards who can score. The only thing, Declan, I think, is they don't really get goals, their forward line. And you think of the two goals they got against St. Jude's to win that, which was a massive win for them, having been something like, I think there were something like 9 points down, and a man down came out and showed such character, such skill to win that game. And that will give them great confidence. Because if we remember, Jude's ran Kilmacud very close last year. And I think in 2019, Davis has beat Crokes as well. So they will give a good account of themselves, but it's very, very hard to go against Kilmacud. Like, the talent and the work rate of that team is just unbelievable. And, you know, I keep saying, you know, people see the skill that the Kilmacud lads have, the pace that they have, but for me, their work rate, particularly when they lose possession of the ball all over the field, is unbelievable. And then, Declan, you look at a full forward line of, you know, Darren Mullen is a fabulous full forward. Pace, he shows with the ball very well, can score. And then you have Paul Mannion and Shane Walsh. Like, I don't think there's a better full forward line in the country, not to mind in Dublin. So going to be difficult for Davis's, but they have men who will go out and do a job. And if a fella is told to stick to Shane Walsh or Paul Mannion, they'll definitely do that to the best of their ability, and they will give a great show of themselves.
And of course, the man who keeps it all together is Robbie Brennan, the Banish star. And, you know, he's come back this year after the crushing disappointment, obviously, of losing the All-Ireland final last January in Croke Park to Kilcoo. But to keep the group together, to get them going on the road again, it's not an easy thing to do. But so far, he's done it very, very, very well. And of course, the addition of Shane Walsh has just brought it to a new level.
Yeah, look, I've seen Robbie in charge of St. Sylvester's there a few years back. He's such a great man manager. He just loves his football. Very knowledgeable football man as well. And, you know, he's done a great job with these fellas. But these fellas must be a joy to actually train and to work with, because they look so keen. Every time they go out, their work rate is unbelievable. And when I see a team with work rate that are prepared to work so hard, like, you take Paul Mannion, for example, a corner forward, he's probably one of the best tacklers in Dublin football at the moment, you know. So when you see that happening, you know that these guys are really keen, and they really want to get up there again. And I think they're looking at winning Dublin again, and that's the thing that'll be in Robbie's mind, is to get out there and win Dublin. And the next day they'll get a fair game from Thomas Davis, but I just think you couldn't go against Kilmacud in this one.
Okay.
Yeah, great stuff there, Declan. Catching up with Brian a little bit earlier in the week. Actually, you were just mentioning there, Sean, Paul Mannion's actually out for tomorrow. Is that right?
Yeah, so I believe.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. But anyway, we'll see how that unfolds. Okay, so we'll turn our attention to Camogie now then, Sean. Vincent's last night, they captured the 2022 go-ahead Dublin Senior 1 County Championship thanks to a 10-point victory over Nafina in Parnell Park.
Yeah, I think it was 114, I think, to 10 points or something like that. But yeah, look, at Vincent showed their hunger, Reggie. They were beaten in the last two finals by St. Jude's. On the night, they were by far the better team. And what we got for all the young girls there watching, Aisling Marr gave an absolute exhibition, scored 12 points out of the 114 from frees, from 45s, from play, absolutely. And she was ably helped by Grania Quinn at 6 and Anya Woods then as well in the middle of the park, played really well for Vincent's. Nafina will be disappointed, Reggie. Grania Free played sweeper the first half and indeed the second half, but the plan was going really, really well. Owen Ryan and Declan Feeney were quite happy. They were in front of myself and my daughter was with me. And but just before half time, Vincent showed their experience. They notched on a goal and 3 points for the last 6 or 7 minutes, and look at it, was the difference. So look at, well deserved by Vincent, the better team. The county board gave us a great nights entertainment. We had a piper, we had a parade, we had about 4,000 supporters, and it was a terrible night, but a great spectacle for the game of Camogie. And do you know, there was 2,000 young girls at it, I'd say between the age of 5 and 15, and it was lovely to see, but a great spectacle. Vincent's now have actually got the draw straight into the Leinster final. They'll be waiting for the winners of Wexford and Kilkenny, and Vincent's won the Leinster back in 2019. So, you know, a great night entertainment, and a great game of Camogie as well.
Good stuff, yeah. Now, in the hurling, we go back to last weekend, of course, in the Senior Hurling Championship. We got the results, and Ballyboden managed to overcome Lucan.
They did, and it was one of those games that it was 221-23 points. I suppose Shawnee McClellan won't like me for this, but he, you know, Lucan did give a soft goal away, and it was always there between the teams all the way. Great contribution from Simon Lambert. He was marking Chris Crummy. Not only did he probably get the better of him, Reg, but he got 3 points as well. Paul Ryan chipped in with 1-8, and Niall McMurrough, who I genuinely feel, whoever is the county manager, we have Michal O'Donoghue, he has to give this man a call. He's been one of the best forwards in Dublin. He chipped in with 1-3. But on the other side, Lucan, you know, they will be disappointed. They're there year after year. They just don't get across the line. Paul Crumley was excellent. And Colin Walsh and Chris O'Leary did really, really well as well, you know.
Yeah, okay. Well, in the other one then, Nafina came out on top against Vincent's. Good victory for them.
Yeah, it was. And I did say, and I was probably a small bit critical of Nafina, saying that their form this year wasn't as good as the previous year. But they did up their pace. They have a few lads back. Colin Curry got a smashing goal, and it was between the teams all night. Young Heatherton had probably, in the last game against Crows, scored 3 goals. But they dropped Liam Rush back on him and kind of quieted him a little bit, and unfortunately things went from bad to worse. He missed the penalty and then got a red card before it was over. But look at Nafina have come back. It sets up 2 right semi-finals, Reg. You've Bowden versus Crokes obviously the holders, and you've Coola versus Nafina next weekend, and I can't wait for those 2 games. They'll be 2 crackers.
And who's your fancy out of those 4?
Well, people would know me. I'd have a huge grasp for Coola. I think if they can get it right, I still think they'll be very, very hard to beat. But, you know, Crokes are the champions, and you have to admire them for that, and they'll be hard beaten. But one thing I'll say, Bowden are improving, and so too are Nafina, and that's why I think there'll be 2 cracker of games.
Mm, absolutely. Okay, well, we look forward to that. Okay, Dublin GA was stricken down last night with bad news about the death of the legendary Dublin footballer Brian Mullins, of course, who died at the age of 68, the St. Vincent's club man. He won 4 All-Ireland titles with the Dubs, the last of which came in 1983. I was at that game, I remember it well. And during the 90s, Mullins managed Derry 2 league and Ulster title successes. And away from football, of course, he was the director of sport at UCD. And Declan Drake joins me on the line now to pay tribute to Brian. Good morning, Declan. How are you?
Good morning, Reg. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Declan.
Yeah, sad news, Declan, has to be said. Very, very sad news. Short illness, but he went very quickly in the end. But a legend in Dublin GAA circles and respected throughout the county.
Absolutely. A legend in GAA, full stop, I think, Reg. You know, I was out meeting Brian Talty, as you know, there during the week in preparation for this morning's programme and the championship semi-finals this weekend. And Brian was saying that he was going in to see Mulls on Wednesday morning, and in the hospital he knew that his time was fairly short. But, you know, a couple of days after his 68th birthday and all the tributes, and I was in Parnell Park as Sean was for the Camogie last night, and it was a real emotional evening and all around. But the word legend is overused, abused in many respects in modern day life, but you certainly can't say it's been abused in Brian Mullins' case. He was an absolutely iconic figure, stoic. If you wanted anyone to go into the trenches with you in battle, Brian Mullins would be the first person that you would go for. And I think people talk about memories of the great man. I'm old enough to remember 83 in Páirc Cliath, sun-drenched Páirc Cliath in August, All-Ireland semi-final replay. Mullins was outstanding that day. He was like the Pied Piper on the pitch leading Dublin to the All-Ireland in 83. And if you go back to when he made his debut back in the early 70s, Reg and Sean will know this well too, football in Dublin was at such a low ebb. you know, until Kevin Heffernan came along, and Brian was one of the characters then that rejuvenated the game in the capital and set the seeds, really, in many respects, for the great success that we've had over the last number of years. So I take this public opportunity to extend my sympathies to Brian's family and all his friends in St. Vincent's and in UCD as well.
Yeah, as I said, Sean, I have my memory of that final. Unfortunately, that day I was supporting Galway because my uncle was playing centre-half back, Peter Lee, and I'll never forget it, the 12 men of Dublin getting victory over the 14 men of Galway. So I remember Brian Mullins and, of course, the incident with Talty in that game as well. So a legend is the word with him, all right. But what are your memories that stand out of Brian?
Yeah, well, look, at Declan probably stole my thunder there. He in the game down in Cork, he was absolutely outstanding. But there's one memory, and it gets shown on a telly very often. It's a Leinster final, 1979, and actually he committed an offence in the sense that it awfully were beating Dublin 9-8, and Dublin were going for six in a row, and they were just behind, and there was a throw-up ball, and Brian Mullins wasn't involved in throw-up ball, but when the ball was thrown up, Brian appeared from 20 yards and got ahead of everybody, punched it on, and, well, anyway, the story goes, it ended up in the Offaly net, and Dublin won again. But he was an absolute legend. I had the pleasure of working for himself and Dave Billings, unfortunately. Both of them are gone now. Yeah. When I ran teams in UCD, but... early in the show, you mentioned that when he had something to say, you always knew where you stood. But he was. But there was a soft spot to Brian as well, and people probably wouldn't see it. But he could always have a go off you, but he'd come back afterwards and ask you, were you okay? Yeah. And an absolute legend. And fellas, at my age, 65, Brian Mullins won his first All-Ireland at 19 years of age. I know he was 20 shortly after that, but he brought a lot of people, along with Kevin Heffernan, and poor old Anthony O'Toole is gone as well now. That team brought an awful lot of Dublin people into playing the GAA, and we really have to thank him.
Time for football now. Delighted to be joined on the line by Alan Cawley. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Very good indeed. Busy weekend of sport going on. It's all been good. But last night in the... SSE, of course, Derry got the job done in Pats. A good 1-0 victory for them and pushes them up the table a little bit closer to Shamrock Rovers.
Oh, it's a massive win, Reggie. Yeah, when you think of St. Pat's, we're looking for their sixth win on the trot, so they were the most informed team. And to go away from home for Derry City, obviously to play Pats and to get the victory, it's absolutely massive. Because I did say a couple of weeks back, I still think there's plenty of life in the title race, but Derry have to win all their games. And that was obviously one of the toughest that they were going to come across. So to go away from home and beat Pats and put the pressure back on Shamrock Rovers. Now it's back to 2 points. And obviously they have a tough game tonight down in Sligo as well. So I do believe there's plenty of life left in the title race yet.
Yeah, I was going to say about that one to get away to Sligo. I mean, Sligo have had a bit of a mixed bag of a season. What have they won? 11 games and they've lost 11, drawn 8. But they, you know, at the start of the season they were looking slightly stronger than that. But it won't be easy for Rovers going away there to try and get a victory.
No, it's very up and down the form all season, hence them losing their manager, obviously, and changing. But since John Russell has come in, I think he's accumulated a lot of points in the second part of the season, and he's done very well. So there'll be a massive crowd at that as well. There's no love lost between those two clubs. And there's huge pressure on Shamrock Rovers now. And I did feel the fact that their schedule is so busy coming up that they're going to be tested, and they're absolutely going to be tested in the coming weeks, because I think they're unbeaten now in 13 and in all competitions. They're in brilliant form. And that really puts the pressure on them, that victory last night.
Yeah. Dundalk, quick mention to them as well. Good 2-0 victory over Drogheda.
Drogheda. Needed as well, Reggie. Yeah. They've kind of fallen off the wagon a little bit over the last 2 weeks, because even if you go back about 4 or 5 weeks ago, I still had Dundalk in the mix as well, something similar to Derry, if they got themselves sorted out. But their form in the last 3 or 4 weeks has been very, very patchy. So that was a big win, local Derby get back on track. And I think, to be fair to Stevie, he only took over at the start of the season, Stevie O'Donnell, so... You would have expected, basically hoping anyway, that you would have got into Europe. I think that was what the aim was. They were never going to challenge for the league, to be fair to them. And I think if they finish in third, that would be a good season for them.
Yeah, okay. Across the water then, we got to mention it's getting back on track after the international break, I suppose. First of all, just mention that, of course, the performance against Armenia. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I suppose like everyone else, Reggie, great for 70 minutes and then... that moment of kind of two moments of madness, really, for the 10-minute spell. And I couldn't believe it, really, to be honest with you. Like so many in the ground or people at home watching, they were so in control. But it just goes to show you, if you switch off for a couple of minutes, no matter who you're playing against, you can be punished. And I think that's what happened. And I think Stephen needed a performance and a result where it was kind of a resounding victory. He didn't get that, so it's still very much the same, Reggie, in the sense that after every match we're having these debates. But certainly I got the feeling in the ground, people are right behind him. And you look at the crowd that was at the match as well. There is outside noise from pundits in different places, but I definitely think they're behind him at the moment. But I just think those type of games against the likes of Azerbaijan, Luxembourg, Armenia, they're the ones that are putting all the pressure on him. We do really well in the games, that kind of the tougher matches, if you like. But it's those games we need to be winning. And sometimes I think his interviews afterwards don't really tell the picture as well. He can be jazzing things up that are not there either at times. So I think there's lots of work to be done after Christmas in the Euros, so it's a big campaign for him, but he deserves to get the campaign, and we'll see how he gets on with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, a couple of big derbies across the water. Arsenal, Tottenham, of course, a big one for me at 12:30 today. That one kicks off. I feel pretty confident, though. Home victory.
Yeah, a massive game, Reggie. I'm looking forward to it. The two derbies over the weekend, but this one is as big as the one tomorrow, I think, because of the form of both Arsenal and Spurs. Had great starts to the season. And I think, yeah, I would probably shade towards Arsenal as well. They're probably playing the better football. But they're definitely playing the better football. I think the big thing with Spurs is, even though they're not playing well, they're getting results. So that's huge for them. But I think Arsenal, to be fair, have been the form team. Even ahead of Man City, I think, Reggie, I think they've been brilliant so far. Despite that loss to Man United, I think Arsenal have had a brilliant start. And the new signings, Zinchenko and Jesus and all, have made such a difference. So I'm looking forward to the game. And my Harry is a Spurs man, and obviously you're Arsenal. So, but I do think Arsenal might share it.
Yeah, I do think they might, but it's going to be a close one, there's no question about
definitely,
it, but it does bring us on to tomorrow then. I spoke to Ken earlier about it, City at home to United, the biggest one of the year, obviously, that derby for up around there. Hard to see, I know United have done better than everybody has expected so far this season, but it's hard to see them getting a result, and Haaland, of course, being the one they need to contain, and the United defence being a little bit leaky. You'd probably go with City, would you?
Yeah, you'd edge towards City, definitely, and you'd have to fancy them, the form that they're showing, the players they have, and the quality all over the pitch, and as you said, Haaland as well has had such a start, 11 Premier League goals. It's unbelievable how well he's done so far, and coming to a new league and a new culture and all that. So it's crazy how well he's done. But I think United have done well themselves, Reggie. But one thing I like about the manager, he looks like a manager that won't get too carried away. He's very measured and balanced in his comments. So despite the fact they've had the four victories and turn the season round, and they're looking a lot better, and there's a bit more stability in the team, I still don't think he'll be getting carried away. He knows there's a lot of work still to be done. So, and obviously starting tomorrow, but I would edge towards Man City. You'd have to, with the quality they have.
Absolutely. Okay, just quickly for our Liverpool fans out there, there's plenty of them. They've got a tough one. Brighton sitting in fourth place, and they've got them at home. Obviously, you expect Liverpool to get the result, but you wouldn't be surprised with a draw or even a victory here for Brighton.
Yeah, that'd be a tough game, and Brighton have had such a brilliant start, but the problem for Brighton now is the manager is gone. So it'll be interesting to see how they react to that, Reggie, and obviously the new manager coming in, how will he do? But certainly in terms of the start of the season that they've had, they've been brilliant, Brighton, and Potter, all credit must go to him. Obviously he's moved on to Chelsea now, and it'll be interesting to see how he goes. I think the two stories will be interesting now, how Brighton will react to him going, and how he'll get on at Chelsea. So lots to look forward to anyway, lots to tune into, but that could be a draw, I agree with you.
A rugby now, delighted to be joined on the line by Will Slattery of the Irish Independent and, of course, the Let's Wing podcast. Morning, Will, how are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, very well indeed. Have to chat to you about this emerging Ireland side and the game they had against the Grickas yesterday. You'd have to wonder, what's the point of it all? They hammered them, 54 points to 7. I get the idea. I kind of understand why they want to do it, but it kind of needs to be a little bit more meaningful games than that, doesn't there?
Yeah, I think the fact that the stream kind of crashed halfway through, and the majority of people, however many there were, who did tune in, were kind of cut adrift from it for a period, kind of summed up the kind of slapshod nature of it in the end. Like, when it was first mooted before the announcement, there was an idea that there could be stronger South African teams involved potentially, and that there might be you know, some other players going down that would be a little more established. As it's turned out, even with Kieran Foley's injury, that kind of robbed the tour of one of the key narratives that people were maybe interested and excited to see, which is whether Kieran Foley can establish himself firmly as the third, maybe even second choice Ireland at half, depending on how Andy Farrell wants to go about it. As it turned out, the Griquas were very poor. Ireland, emerging Ireland, you know, they looked good. They scored some nice tries. They ran roughshod over it. How much you can really take from it? Not a whole lot, in my opinion. Like, one thing of note is the performance of the halfbacks. Jack Crowley was very good, stepping in for Kieran Frawley. Nathan Doak, who, to be fair, has played a lot bigger games than this, looked good too. And in some ways, the performance of the halfbacks is one of the only things you can't take, because if the halfbacks aren't controlling things well, a game, even against weak opposition, can maybe get a little soppy and away from you. So from that point of view, it was a positive for those two players. Besides that, like Robert Balakoon looking good. Again, he's played far bigger games. He should have been playing in Kingspan Stadium last night against Leinster. And Max Deegan looked good. He's played a lot bigger games than this. So I'm not a fan of it personally. So, you know, it is what it is. There's two more games left. The provinces aren't happy either. I don't know if fans are not engaged. I don't know if we'll learn much from it. So time will tell.
Yeah, I'd like to see the numbers of the stream as well, because that would give you a bit of an idea. I don't think fans are engaged at all. I mean, I'm not, I'm genuinely not trying to be critical of this. I think the idea of it is admirable, and I like the idea of it, but it's, I think the timing is wrong, and I think the quality opposition needs to be up there if they're going to do it and do it right. And as you said, it's wrong that the Knights of Ballacombe, and even Doak, who arguably is a, you know, the first choice nine for Ulster, are not playing in those games like that against Leinster, which is a huge game for Ulster last night. We'll come to that now.
Just one last thing, yeah. Sorry, I was thinking of the timing of it. Like, the timing is absolutely bonkers. Like, I know the provinces are holding their tongue a bit. Like, I was in Kingspan last night, and after the game, Dan McFarlane was asked about it, and he was kind of just like, you know, didn't want to give much away, but you could tell he was seething. Like, it's ridiculous. That
crazy.
Balakoon, Nathan Doak, Tom Stewart, and Stuart Moore, four guys who started in that opening win over Connacht and were really, really impressive, are just being pulled away for this kind of, you know, Mickey Mouse.
Training.
And, like, what's the motivation behind it? Because, like, I'd say 95% of these players have zero chance of featuring in a World Cup unless there was a raft of injuries. Someone like Balakoon, I don't think, needs to prove himself on a tour such as this. He's well-established in the pecking order now. I just think this is, I just don't know. I don't understand the motivation. There's a reason tours don't take place during the season, because they would be immensely disruptive.
Yeah.
Thankfully, there's been no injuries thus far, but, you know, fingers crossed on that front.
Yeah, they could easily do it while the senior team are gone off on tour, wherever they can go and visit an emerging nation with a second team. And it'd be good for a coaching staff. It'd be good for succession of coaching. And it would also be good for succession of players. And it wouldn't interfere with other things. So I think that would be the better time. And anyway, it's enough given out for one morning. Ulster last night, hosting Leinster in torrential rain, it has to be said. The conditions that we had early in the morning went north later in the day, and it was horrific at one stage last night watching what they had to play in. But they weren't up to much in the beginning, Ulster, to be honest with you, and Leinster looked completely dominant, and then Leinster kind of let it slip a little bit and Ulster got back into it a bit more. But overall, it was probably a convincing display by Leinster.
Yeah, the first hour in particular, Leinster completely dominated, and if a crooked throw had been more accurate on the 5 metre line at 20-3, the game would have been put to bed, and Leinster probably would have ended up getting a bonus point. A few things stood out to me. You know, firstly, Leinster's forward power, you know, that's still an area where Ulster struggled to match up with them. Like, Leinster dominated the scrum, the contact area, the breakdown. They snaffled more turnovers. That was kind of the noticeable feature of the game, considering, as you mentioned, the rain was absolutely torrential, especially kind of in the second and third quarters. And also, I don't think tailored their game. Like, they've scored 40, they've been averaging 45 points a game before this fixture. And they still try to play a lot of rugby, even though the conditions were atrocious. They took a quick line out in their own 22 in the build-up to the second try. Got turned over, Leinster go to the corner and get a maul try. Like, that kind of typified, I thought, their kind of inability to change tack. You know, Leinster put up a lot of high balls, got some good change from it, led to a penalty or two. So that would be a thing, if I'm looking back at it from an Ulster perspective, I'd be very frustrated by. Because when it did dry up in the second half, they did actually play a lot better. They almost got over for a second try through Aaron Sexton, which would have made it very tight at the end. But I think that would have kind of camouflaged the real nature of the game. And that's what I thought Leinster did pretty much dominate from start to finish, bar a little late flurry from Ulster.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see how it unfolds. I know it's going to be the toughest game they have of the season, always is when they play against Leinster. So we'll see how things unfold, because Ulster would have been feeling good about their start so far. But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. Can they bounce back from that? On the other hand, talking about season starting well, it hasn't started well for Connacht or Munster. Connacht in particular going down again to the Bulls in, you know, fairly easy fashion, I suppose. And we predicted it. We spoke about it the start of the season that they're having. It's a tough, very, very tough start to the season. And then you get the moment of madness from a senior player like Bundiaki last week. And, you know, he's gone for 8 weeks. And it just seems to be a bit of a shambles at the moment down Connacht.
Yeah, the fixture list was always very daunting when we saw it at the start of the season. And because the sports ground is getting a new artificial pitch put in, they opted to have their first three matches away from home as well, which obviously adds more pressure on that front. And yeah, as you mentioned, Bundiaki getting sent off and then copping the even longer ban for his behaviour. Like, from your senior guy, your established Ireland international, that is just unforgivable. Like, he's putting his team in a massive hole. And I know the assistant coach came out during the week and kind of said, oh, we love his passion. He's still sticking around to, you know, motivate the guys and give his wisdom. But, like, that's very cheap talk, considering he's meant to be there on the pitch. They've kind of changed around the regulations a little to let some of the senior guys come back earlier, given the emerging Ireland tour. And, like, I still think they would have probably been beaten anyway by the Bulls, but certainly Bundiaki's presence. They lost 28-14 in the end. Like, so they were actually quite close to maybe getting a bonus point, considering they were 28-0 down. So Bundy's presence would have made a major difference. So it's going to be a very tough year for Connacht. I think by the time Bundy comes back, they're going to be cut adrift in the league. The next two games are, I think, Munster and Leinster. They're at home, but I would still be surprised if they won either of those. Albeit Munster, you know, have had a very tough start themselves, so potentially that is a winnable game. But yeah, and there's been obviously a reshuffle in the coaching staff, with Pete Wilkins being promoted to head coach, Andy Friend, going up to director of rugby. So there's a bit of transition in the coaching staff as well. They've obviously brought in a lot of players from Leinster who haven't really fired yet from the games I've watched so far this season. It'll take them maybe a little more time to bed in. And it'll also be a test to see how good those guys are. They've been playing in the best environment in Europe, where it's maybe easier to look good playing alongside some of the best players in Ireland. So having to kind of do it with maybe a less stellar supporting cast is a big test for those guys too. So yeah, a lot of question marks around Connacht at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to see how they answer them as well. It doesn't get any easier for them. And Munster, we've got to move on to that. The shock result last weekend, it has to be said, and no matter what way you look at it, it is a shock result. But Munster going down to the Dragons in a fairly tame performance by their standards. They didn't really offer anything by way of a resistance. It looked like, you know, maybe they were going to get themselves back into the game in the second half, but Dragons stood up and, yeah, you're just kind of scratching your head going, what's going on here? Something just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, that honestly was a brutal performance. I for my sins, I tuned in and watched the whole thing while Exeter and Harlequins played out a 43-42 thriller on another station, and I kind of felt good at them that I hadn't switched over. But I was just intrigued to see how Munster would bounce back, and the more I watched, the more kind of like, it was like watching like a dark comedy almost. Like, they were just so, so poor. And they were not only poor in areas where they've struggled over the last few years, their handling, their skill level. Like, some of the passing, like Mike Haley had a chance to put three players away in the right touch line in the last couple of minutes, and he just flipped a real casual ball forward and into touch. Malachi Fekitoa did something similar earlier in the second half, and he already looks way off the pace. He already looks like he could be a very expensive dud potentially if his form line doesn't pick up from what we've seen in the first 2 weeks. But then even again in the contact zone at the breakdown, they were outdone by a Dragons team who had shipped 50 the week before, whose director of rugby wasn't even at the game because there's talk he might be pushed out, and Dean Ryan. So it's not as if they were playing a team in form by any means. It just was Munster were so poor that the Dragons were able to have a bounce back victory, which is very alarming. And all of a sudden they have Zebre at home today in Cork, and it's kind of, again, I might end up tuning in and watching this in its entirety just to see what maybe, will they bounce back? You'd presume they will. I think they're, you know, 28-point favourites.
Yeah, they'll hammer Zebre. They'll hammer them.
Well, if they don't, Reggie, like, the alarm bells are ringing, because similarly to Connacht's fixture list, like, you know, Leinster or Munster in the next couple of weeks have, I think, the Bulls, they have Connacht, they have Leinster, they have Ulster before the November International. So if they say they beat Zebre, they still need to pick up a couple of wins in some tough games.
Yeah,
like, so if you don't want to go away for a 3-week break with only one or two wins on the board. Because, like, already it's looking like, you know, with the, like, the Lions have picked up two really good away wins in Wales already, so they're going to be stronger than this year. The Sharks, the Bulls and the Stormers are quality sides. You have Leinster and Ulster. You have maybe a Scottish team who usually features in the top eight. Because I honestly think there's a possibility now of Munster missing the top eight and potentially missing out on Champions Cup rugby, which would be a disaster considering the financial situation they are in. They need those European home games. And from what I've seen so far, and looking at the fixture list, if they don't right this ship very quickly, I honestly think they might miss out on Europe, which would just be a catastrophe.
Well, perished thoughts of that, so we'll see. I'm sure they'll bounce back against Zebre and then we can start to see how it unfolds after that. But it is, you're right, it's tough now. They're in a difficult situation and they need to dig themselves out of it again. And that seems to be the storyline with Munster a lot of late, and it's certainly not the storyline that you expect with them. But maybe we're thinking too much. Maybe we're giving them a little bit too much praise. They need to earn it back a bit more. That might be the other side of it, because, you know, for a number of years now, they've kind of been falling at the times when they need to be performing. So in similar to fashion, maybe as Ulster have done for a number of years now. A lot of talk, but no actual results to show for it. So we'll see how that unfolds. Finally then, to finish, Will, big news during the week, it has to be said. I was talking earlier to Stephen O'Brien about Tagovailoa, the quarterback for the Dolphins, and a big concussion issue happening with them in the Thursday night football against the Bengals, and horrible scenes, as Stephen described it on the television. And here we have again in Ireland now, it's raised its head again, excuse the pun, and we've got three players, Ben Marshall, Fitzpatrick, and of course
David Corkery,
who I played alongside for many years. The three names that have been associated with a case that's been put to the IRFU for concussion. And this is the first time we've heard it in England. We've had the names linked to it over there, but now we've got some Irish names to it, and it really puts some kind of meat on the bones.
Yeah, big time. It had been kind of mooted a few weeks ago that a lawsuit was forthcoming, but we didn't know any of the names. Now that we do, all three players you mentioned there have been talking publicly in the past about their struggles, about why they retired, and their post-rugby issues they've had around concussion. And, you know, the sad thing is they're not the only ones in Ireland. There's plenty of other players we can name, you know, who've given interviews in the past. You know, Dominic Ryan, even John Fogarty, who's in with Ireland at the moment. Like, he's talked about it. Bernard Jackman's another one who's spoken about it in his career. So it will be very interesting to see how this plays out. Like, I'm not a legal expert. I don't know how strong a case can be. You know, the NFL obviously went through similar things in the past. I think that's maybe slightly different, because I think the NFL were kind of like, you're actively trying to like deny a link between their sport and concussions, whereas, like, you know, rugby have been trying to make steps over the last number of years. Obviously there's breakdowns we saw in the summer with Jeremy Lachman's incident. They have brought in protocols. Yeah, I'm fascinated to see how it plays out. Like, it's so sad to see some of the players in the UK as well. Steve Thompson, very high profile player, I suppose, you know, you'll know well, Reggie. I think to sort of come back to maybe the start of professionalism, when they didn't really know how much to train the players, how much full contact to do with players in training. And seemingly there was a lot of kind of heavy, full-duty contact in these training sessions, which obviously exasperated things because they were playing games the weekend. You know, that seems to be something that I know Steve Thompson has spoken about from early in his career that has changed drastically to now, at least.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt there was huge amount of full contact training when we were playing, which has completely reduced. I mean, in the early days when I started around 97, 98, you were looking at 2-hour sessions, training sessions, no problem. Maybe even they dragged on longer. They weren't managed time-wise. And by the end of my career, they were down to about 1 hour 20. And I think now they're even down as far as an hour for a training session. So they're far better managed in that sense. But my own belief is that isn't necessarily the issue. The issue for me is all around the contact area and the tackle, the type of tackle that's been made. They're all high tackles. It goes back to what I said. I said this 5 years ago. Rugby league style tackling came into the game. It changed the entire way that tackles were made, and it brought in a more upright stance and a more upright contact area, and that's what's causing the major problems, in my opinion. It's got to go back to waist tackles, get lower, force it in that way. And then, you know, the likes of the Bundyaki thing, I've heard former players excusing it, and I've heard former players, and like even Stephen Ferris said 5 years ago that would have been considered a brilliant clear out. Well, I'm sorry, 5 years ago there was no VAR in soccer. The game changes. You got to move on. You got to adjust accordingly. And you know, the reality is there. People are getting hurt. There's concussions week after week after week. It's a real thing. It's got to be addressed. And the tackle area is the main area of concern. And I know they're trying to address it, but it's still happening. So it's not working.
Yeah, and I kind of mentioned that, you know, the early days of professionalism, but that's the thing, you know, Ben Marshall is a young guy. Yeah. He played in the last 6-7 years. Declan Fitzpatrick, likewise, you know, he played under Joe Schmidt too. These guys aren't guys who played 20 years ago. These guys are played in the recent past. And as you mentioned there, as much as they brought in protocols and they've tried to lower tackle heights, every single weekend we see high tackles. You know, the Bundiaki one was a clear. We see people going off with concussion. So they can bring in as many laws as they want or protocols, but this game lends itself to people tackling, you know, big men tackling big men. There will be big collisions and there will be concussions. It's just, as you mentioned, try to maybe mitigate as much as you can without kind of completely changing the game to an unrecognizable state. It's a tough job because people are watching that, you know, younger people with children deciding whether they want their children to play rugby. Like, that's an eternal question. Like, if it keeps going this way and we keep hearing more and more of these stories, will people be less likely to play the sport? And then it'll diminish in on itself because there's not enough people playing it. It's a real question. And all you have to do is watch any game over the course of this weekend and you'll see potential incidents. Yeah. And they're not nice to see. You almost become desensitized to them, which is bad because you've seen so many of them. You're kind of like, oh, well, at least he's walking off concussed rather than needing a stretcher, which is a terrible thing to say. But these are thoughts to go through your head when you see as many incidents as these. So, yeah, it's a really critical time. And whatever happens in this lawsuit could really set the agenda. They might have to make even more sweeping changes depending on what happens.
Hey, time to turn our attention to NFL now. Plenty going on in that. And as always, we're joined by Stephen O'Brien of the UK Packers podcast. Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie.
I'm not so bad at all. I'm glad to see that the weather has cleared up and we're in for a nice dry weekend. I've got a county final later on to get to, well, young lads playing in the under-11 county final, so can't wait for that. An exciting weekend for them, but there's plenty going on in the NFL as well. But there's a bit of, controversy again coming around. We see that Tua Tagovailoa suffered a concussion on Thursday night. That's easy for me to say that name, isn't it? On Thursday night against the Bengals. And it wasn't great because he'd picked up one the week before as well. So concussion coming back into the NFL conversation again.
Yeah, the only thing worse than the scenes is your pronunciation, yeah. Reg, of Tua Tagovailoa.
Tagovailoa,
yeah. Look, it's a really bad indictment on the NFL because we all know the story by now, Reg. There's a film called Concussion with Will Smith. If people don't know who Will Smith is, he's the guy who went up and slapped Chris Rock during that ceremony.
Yeah, that's
right?
What he's famous for now.
That's what he's known for now. So the big buzzword, the NFL for, you know, years tried to pretend that concussions weren't a thing at the same time of upgrading their gear and changing the rules to try to stop concussions from happening. So, you know, the kickoffs, that's where a lot of them happen. So they moved the kickoffs up a little bit so that they wouldn't have these high-speed collisions. Also, when you're running back, you can't lower your head and all this type of stuff. So it's already under the microscope. Not to mention, Reg, they paid billions in lawsuits to people with concussion. The grisly thing about concussions, and I'm sorry if you're eating your cornflakes, is that usually they can't see the damage that CTE does, which is the sort of, you know, direct result of concussions, and how it affects the player's brain until after the player has passed away. And sometimes they pass away in pretty shocking ways. And we've seen, you know, OJ and the case there, and that was linked to CTE. We see Aaron Hernandez's documentary on Netflix. That was linked to CTE. So it's massively in the news. And here we see Tua, who plays for the Dolphins, last week, visibly concussed, Reggie. I'm not a doctor, but...
But how did it happen, Stephen? How can that allow to happen? Like, I mean, it's the same with rugby, with the HIAs. Yeah. I mean, the protocols are there. They stand them down. Do they not stand them down for 3 weeks as a standard precaution?
Yeah, see, that's the thing, Reg, right? They have to prove that it's a concussion first. And then, and that's what I'm sort of saying as well, and that's what most of the pundits are saying. They don't really care what the protocols are, because when you can see something on the face... So one of my favourite scenes from a movie is where this guy walks into a solicitor's office, and he's trying to say that he isn't guilty. and your man shows him a 4K video of him saying, hey, look, it's me stealing TVs.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how obvious this was.
Yeah.
He gets, last week, right, he gets his head slammed into the ground. He gets up, shakes his head in sort of cartoonish fashion as if to say, oh, I've got a head injury. Tries to walk and his knees buckle. And his offensive linemen have to hold him up. They cart him off the field, Reg, right? Apparently he goes through, and people can't see me, but I'm doing air quotes.
Yeah.
He did this protocol. It's very robust, apparently, where they have doctors who are not affiliated with the team. Because if it's a team doctor, you think,
yeah,
you know, they have their duty to protect players and all of this, as any doctor would. So they have a sort of external body who come in, and they look at him. They did their test, and they sent him back out. And he finished the game, right, which was bizarre. And after the game, Reg, they said that was a back and ankle injury. Now, I've never shook my head after an ankle injury and then collapsed onto the ground. So that was bad, right? But then they send him out again on Thursday Night Football. So he plays Sunday, doesn't really practice for 3 days, and they send him out again. Again, in cartoonish fashion, he gets whirled around and slammed into the ground. And it was really gruesome watching Reg, because you can see him on the ground. He rolls over and he's paralytic. And you can see his hands in a ghoulish fashion. They're kind of paralyzed to the way they are.
That's really
they kept
bad.
Showing replays on TV. They cart him off in an ambulance. And now he's out with concussion protocol. Shocker, right? But it looks really bad for the NFL, Reds, because he seemed physically concussed on Sunday.
Mm.
He has a couple of days rest. And then he gets his face slammed into the ground again. And he's literally having a seizure on the pitch. So people are calling into question that, you know, it was visibly wrong.
Yeah.
When you look at it, even though they follow the protocols, you have to wonder, are the protocols enough? Because you know this in rugby, Reg, the injuries you get are catastrophic. People look at these and go, you'd see these in some sort of a car crash or violent injury, but you're only playing sport. So what they're saying is that a player like a rugby player always wants to stand up for his team, correct me if I'm wrong, especially a quarterback. So you have to protect the player from himself. So they will ask, too, how do you feel? And he'll go, great.
Yeah, no.
And he'll get out there on the field, Reg. But that's because he has to be the talisman. He can't be weak. You know, he has to go out onto the field. And this is the manifestation of it.
Well,
that
this is
he
what,
might have.
Yeah, that's what was supposed to be taken out of the player's hands with all of these protocols.
Exactly.
The same way with in the rugby and everything else that was supposed to be taken away. So it's not a good look, as you say. And I'd say there'll be a serious investigation into this because it's... Yeah, it's bad. It's very, very bad. Time will tell, but it'll be a real test of just how serious they are about the concussion, or is it just, you know, talk? You know, that's really what we're talking about here.
You know yourself, Reg, these can be life-changing injuries, you know, and you might not see it now. You know, it's in the short term, he might be able to get back on the field, but it's when he's in later life, these things come back. Even football players from heading the ball, they've seen that they've got the CTE concussion stuff. So, it doesn't look good on
not
the face.
Great.
You know?
Not great. Okay, moving on. The NFL is coming to London. The first international series game between the Saints and the Vikings taking place in Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Yeah, it's brilliant to see it back. So we have a game this week, and then my beloved Packers for the first time ever are coming to London next week. But look, Regent Street, Reg, and we talk about it every year, is awash with NFL fans. Most of the time, people don't really care who plays. Just the opportunity to see the NFL and a proper NFL game. I know the soccer games go to the States and they've pre-season and all this, but it wouldn't be the same as having Man United v Man City or whatever in a regular season game over there. You know, we've become more knowledgeable over here. There's a massive fan base. Every team usually has a fan group, including our own. So they're very knowledgeable. So you tend to, people from the fan groups kind of get their hands on tickets. And so we're doing the correct things at the game now, Reg, if you will. So, you know, the opposing fans are shouting when the offense is on the field and vice versa. But look, 250,000 people go through Regent Street. And Tottenham Stadium as well has sort of become world famous, if you will, because, you know, Levy there, he built that stadium, Reds, didn't he, to sort of cater for NFL. So it's a spectacle in itself, and there's videos on YouTube and on Twitter where the Spurs field retracts and the NFL field comes up from underneath it. So, you know, that alone is amazing. And they've kind of built it to be the pageantry where you can sort of, you know, be down by the tunnel and watch the players run out and stuff like that. So it does an awful lot for the NFL over this side of the pond. And as someone who analyses it over here, it's a brilliant thing to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We're into week four in Araka. How did we get on last week?
Not great. Do you know why? And this is what I'll do. And I promise you, right? So next week, what I'm going to do is let's do a feature on the ACCA a little bit and what goes into the analysis to break it down. But I picked the Bills, for instance, last week, Reg, and they're Super Bowl favourites. Some of these games, when you look at them and you look at the spread, it might be a little bit big, but you're like, ah, it's kind of a gimme because it's only a touchdown. And the Bills got absolutely waxed. When you look at the underdogs, Reds, the underdogs went 9 of 7 last week. So more underdogs won outright than the favourites did. So it's very difficult to cover the spread. But that's why I go for a 3-game ACCA, is to try reduce that thing. So here's my ACCA for this week, and we've got low spreads. The Minnesota Vikings and Saints game is in London. Usually the favourites will run away with this game because it's a bit of a bizarre atmosphere. So Minnesota to cover the spread is -3. So they have to score a field goal or more. So I reckon they'll do that against the Saints, particularly because Jameis Winston is injured. The Indianapolis Colts go up against the Tennessee Titans. They're -6.5 to cover the spread. So that's a touchdown. There's loads of analysis that goes into that. You know, we've Derrick Henry for the Titans. He's dynamite, but he keeps getting smashed in the backfield because their wide receivers aren't any good. You know, I'm picking the Colts to win that game because the Titans can't really get it going this season at all. And then the Philadelphia Eagles are -3.5, which is a low spread. They're really lighting it up this year, Reg, against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Sometimes the Jaguars pull out a win when they're the underdogs, but I'm going with the Eagles here because they're playing strong. So that's 6-1, which is a tenner down and 70 back. But next week, I can delve deeper into that ACCA and give you more reason why it's so frustrating when it doesn't come out.
Yeah, we'll call it the woulda, coulda, shoulda section of the show. Yeah. What other games are to look out for this week in the series?
Yeah, there's some good ones. Yeah. So if you have Game Pass and you're willing to watch some good games, there's Bills versus Ravens. Bills are looking to sort of bounce back. They were flying high. They were a Super Bowl favourite. I put them in my ACCA and then they exploded. They face off against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. So they're two really potent offences. So they've got really strong defences, Reg, but it's brilliant when you see these guys, you know, who are so prolific at scoring touchdowns, come up against these defences, because the storyline coming into it's always like, oh, it's going to be sort of an attrition of what, and then they put up 50 burgers each. And then the other one is Chiefs at Bucks. So the Packers went against the Bucks, and it was a really low scoring game, and Tom Brady wasn't doing his thing, and he was missing wide receivers and all of these storylines. But Patrick Mahomes, Paddy Mahomes and the Chiefs are always sort of high flying, and it's always great to see sort of, because this is passing the baton, right? If Tom Brady, who's like, should have retired about 10 years ago, but is still doing the business at a high level, versus Paddy Mahomes, who's the sort of up-and-coming young buck. So they're going against each other. It's in the Buck Stadium, and we've seen all the tragedy there with Hurricane Ian and stuff like that. So this could be a blowout, Red, especially if the Bucks can't put up points, because they seem to not be able to, but they've got a dynamite defense. So that should be a really entertaining game to watch as well, full of skill.
Thanks for listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.